Hi, my name is Eileen M. I am a recovered compulsive overeater from New Hampshire. And I'd like to just start this by inviting my higher power in so that I can be of maximum service. Okay, I guess I'll start with, I heard in the opening the word surrender, and I love that word because it just reminds me of I had to get to a point where I realized that my way of living just wasn't working for me. I'll start with I was raised in an alcoholic home, had one alcoholic parent, and my parents, pretty much their whole thinking process was just like entrenched with fear. There was always a lot of fear and tension. But, I know that wasn't the reason that I developed compulsive overeating. I was a compulsive overeater because I have a disease, and it's a spiritual in nature. It's a spiritual malady, and a malady is the definition of malady is a chronic condition. And I know today that it's physical and mental in nature. And I'm going to be during this talk, I'm going to be making a few references to the literature, namely the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the AA 12 and 12. There's a few passages that have really struck me over the years, so I want to read them. I have to say, I started probably compulsively overeating very, very young. I was probably about 5 or 6 years old. It kind of started with just eating just regular sugar out of the sugar bowl. That's how it started. I really remember that really clearly. And I was always couldn't figure out why I was doing it. I didn't know why. I thought, why don't I eat like other people? Because I thought that, what I observed, especially in college, I observed that other people didn't do this. And I have this little college story was that I used to go home with people that were friends in school. We used to go to each other's houses for the weekend, like their parents' house, and because I went away to school out of state. And I had this friend, and I would go to her house on holidays, and her parents had this candy jar in the living room, and I would go there like a couple weekends in a row, and I would pass by that jar, and it was always full. And I used to think, how are they doing that? Because if that were me, like that, I would be constantly going to the store and buy, to try to replenish it, because there's no way I could keep a full jar, anywhere. And that was really baffling. I couldn't really figure out what was wrong with me. I said, there must be something wrong with me because other people don't seem to be doing this. And I was introduced to OA at age 19. And I was in college at the time, and I went to one meeting. And then I concluded after that one meeting that there was no way I could do that. Because, here I am, I'm in college, I live in a dorm, there's no way I can do this program. So, clearly I wasn't ready to recover at that point, I did come back into OA at 26, and that was preceded by having overeaten one night and woke up with a really bad, raging stomach pain and was really fearful. And then I just decided, okay, I'm going. And I had heard about OA, before, and I knew there was a meeting locally. So I went to it. And, I remember that first meeting really well. And one of the first things I heard, somebody started talking about insanity because, in step two, it says, believe that a higher power could restore me to sanity or could restore us to sanity. And I thought, wait a minute, I don't have insanity. I'm not an insane person. And I didn't understand that my way of living and interacting with other people was insane and my way of eating was insane. I just didn't understand that at all. And then I started hearing about how the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I thought, I had to hear that many, many times for that to sink in and to be able to identify, okay, yeah, maybe my eating is out of control and I can't control it. Maybe that's a problem, but I really wasn't convinced for a long time. And actually, within about a month of that, of coming into OA, I did get entirely abstinent. I got a sponsor, and I remember like I really wanted to please my sponsor. So I followed her food plan. She was following at that time, it was called the Gray Sheet, which I think was endorsed by OA. And that was, you know, a very strict food plan. And a lot of us started doing it because that's what we thought was the right thing to do. So, you know, we followed that. And, you know, I started, this was like 1989. So at that time, we had AA literature only. So we started using AA literature, and that's what we had at meetings. And there was a lot of focus on, you know, using all the tools, which, you know, are great. I mean, the tools are great. And what happened in my story is that, you know, the action of using the tools worked for a really long time. And then after a while, it just didn't work anymore. And I needed to have something more. And I did go, let's see, when I got into the program, I got absent within the month, the first month. And then I went on this 12-step retreat, and the retreat was in New Hampshire where I live. And it was given by a man who was involved in the Los Angeles Inner Group. And so he came all the way to New Hampshire and took us through the steps in the big book. And it was really very enlightening. I got through all the steps and I became abstinent for 3 years. And, you know, I don't know what happened exactly, but I remember that we did not, I don't know, it's really hard to remember, but we didn't focus on, you know, continuing to practice the steps. And I eventually went back to my disease. My disease just kind of went back. I went back to it. And I developed anorexia because what happened was I had lost too much weight from this Gray Sheet plan. And I was about 20 pounds overweight, and I was really getting high off of that, you know, like, oh, look at, I felt like I was in complete control. So anyway, that took about 8 years to recover from that. And then I went back to compulsive eating. So it was kind of like, I kept doing these tools. And one of the tools that I did a lot was journal writing. And, you know, I was writing in a journal. And the problem with that was that, you know, people would say, that was very highly encouraged. People would say, yeah, write your feelings in a journal. So I'd be doing that every day. I'd sit down and write like 20 pages on anger, you know? And, you know, a lot of it was like, you know, sort of pointing the finger and like, you know, look at what they're doing to me. And it's all their fault. And, you know, it was a lot of that, like not taking responsibility. So what was happening during these years that I was in OA was that, you know, I was getting periods of abstinence, and then I would overeat, and then I would be overeating healthy food and think, oh yeah, that's abstinent because it's healthy. But you know, it isn't, because we know the definition of abstinence. You know, it was just what was happening with the emotions. I was writing them down in this journal. And as far as I ever got was, you know, calling somebody up on the phone and complaining. So I was reading the journal and kind of complaining about these other people. And, just like I said, not taking responsibility. So I know I looked a lot on the outside for, you know, I thought that like, if my life got better, if certain things came my way, then I would stop overeating. You know, that would be the solution, right? And I wanted to just refer to page 47. When I was writing, I've written quite a few four steps, but the most recent time I was writing a four step, on page 47 in step four, I just want to read this because it just struck me. It says, we thought conditions drove us to drink. And when we tried to correct these conditions and found that we could not, to our entire satisfaction, our drinking went out of hand and we became alcoholics. It never occurred to us that we needed to change ourselves to meet conditions, whatever they were. I just thought that just was so important to me, because it just, you know, it was kind of like I didn't realize that for years, you know, that I was the one who needed to change. So that was a big eye opener later on, because I wasn't really changing. And so, you know, it was so strange. What happened was, I think maybe my recovery wasn't really linear. I don't want to sound like I'm blaming OA, but, you know, we adopted the OA literature in 1991, and I didn't think that was as instructive on how to recover as the big book is. So Like I never heard the language really of I was the actor trying to run the show. Like I just didn't have any conception of that. Like I didn't realize how much I was trying to manage my own life without any help from a higher power or anyone. And around 2016, this is like, you know, fast forward here for a lot of years of struggling. I decided that I was going to quit OA. So I had been coming consistently since 89. I just decided I was going to quit because I thought the solution, you know, to get better was I just need to go to more meetings or I just need to go to more retreats and conventions, which I did all that. And I wasn't getting the results I thought I should get. And I decided I was going to quit. So I called up a friend in Vermont and I said, you know, I'm going to quit going to OA. It's not working. And she said, well, before you quit, just call this phone number. And it was the phone number of a meeting that was 7 a.m. in the morning called A Vision for You. And A Vision for You is a big book meeting where they read a paragraph or so and discuss it. And, you know, I could not believe, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to listen to it. And, you know, I was willing to do that. And, you know, it's interesting how the gift of desperation makes you willing to do anything. So I started listening to that. And, you know, I was just so intrigued by the quality of recovery on this meeting. It was incredible. And I'd never heard anything like it. And I thought to myself, well, I want what these OA members have. And I'm, you know, I really want to get it. I will do anything to get it, basically. And so I got a sponsor right away. There's just a plethora of sponsors on this meeting. And I took all her suggestions and I took it very seriously. And I thought, you know, if I do nothing else in my lifetime, I'm going to do this because I need to, you know, I need to do this. I've been struggling, you know, I've been struggling and suffering for a long time. So, you know, I did everything she suggested. And of course, then I did more than she suggested because I'm kind of an overachiever. I kind of tend to overdo things. So, you know, I just did everything. And she said to me, you know, you're going to go to a nutritionist and you're not going to decide what your food plan is. You go to a nutritionist who understands food addiction. So I said, okay, you know, I was willing to do that. And I really didn't want to spend the money, you know, but she said, you know, you need to do this. It's very important. So, I got entirely abstinent for 2 days. She said, I want you to get 2 days of entire abstinence. And then we're going to start reading the book together. Essentially, that's what we did. I read the book to her over the phone. She lives in South Carolina. And, you know, I got entirely abstinent. And she told me to send her, you know, a list of my foods that were trigger foods. And I did that. And, you know, as soon as I decided to go through with that process, it's like the food obsession was removed. I mean, it was amazing. Like the second day. And when I was on step 8, I was able to go to Colorado with my husband on a trip. And at the time, I wasn't married to him, but we went on this trip and it was amazing. I was abstinent the entire trip. And I went to great lengths to be abstinent on this trip. And, you know, it was so important to me because I really wanted to get this process down. And so, you know, my sponsor said, well, you know, the steps 1 through 9 are designed so that you get neutrality and you get freedom from your addiction. And then step 10, 11, and 12 needs to be continuously worked or practiced because that's going to address your living problem. And the living problem is really the unmanageability, you know, what's going to be, because that's going to trigger the mental obsession, which, you know, have the mental obsession, you know, to overeat. And, you know, I was really amazed. I made all my amends. So I kind of, this whole process took like 2.5 months, and I had been considering going to an AA big book step study to do this process, but they were going to take a year. They were going to take a year just to do step 4. And there was no way I could have stayed abstinent for a year to do step 4. So I chose this way. And it's really been very effective. This was an effective message of depth and weight that I got from this sponsor. And I'm very grateful because I have been entirely abstinent every day since that first day, which was May 14th, 2016. And so today I just, you know, have made a few notes about what I do today. How I live today is I keep practicing those steps, 10, 11, and 12. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. And I just want to also something in the AA 12 and 12 on page, I think it's 90. There's also, I kind of live by this statement. It's just become so something I practice regularly. It says, okay, on page 90, second paragraph, it is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. Yeah, and that is so powerful, because that's exactly the problem. It's, you know, it's there's something wrong with me, and that's where I need to address that. And what I do is, when I'm disturbed, I go to my higher power and I ask my higher power to please reveal the belief that has me disturbed, because there's always a belief involved. You know, as I believe that other people should be treating me a certain way, or I believe the traffic should be a certain way, and it's not, then I get disturbed, you know. So I really have to look at, like, what are my expectations? You know, I have these expectations of other people. And whenever I have expectations, you know, there goes my serenity. So I've learned that over time. And then I discuss with someone else. You know, once I identify the character defects, I discuss them with someone else, because I believe those character defects block me from my higher power. And, you know, I have my belief in a higher power has evolved over time. It's evolved over the years. And I really believe that my higher power is love. God is love. God is the energy of love. And that flows through me all the time. I'm always connected to it. And sometimes I just am not aware of the connection, especially when I'm in that restless, irritable discontent, which, you know, I am in that place sometimes because I'm human, you know, and I just know exactly how to deal with it now. So that process of going to my higher power, you know, praying for the other person, the sick man's prayer, that's very helpful. And just looking at, where is my thinking faulty in this situation? And do I owe an amends? I mean, that whole process is just, it's so helpful to, you know, it helps repair relationships, and it's just very powerful. And, you know, I do step 11 every day. I do meditation approximately 20 to 30 minutes. Let's see. I also do a nightly review, as it says in the big book on page 85, 86, it talks about doing that. So, you know, I do this nightly review, and I am accountable to I'm accountable to one person every day in my nightly review. So I'm accountable to whatever character defects come up to someone else. And let's see, what else? I do a lot of service, and I sponsor people. And, you know, I love how the big book talks about, encourages us to carry the message and sponsor other people, because it really is a growing experience. And I have to say, you know, it's not easy all the time. It can be very challenging, but that's, you know, challenge. I feel that that's just a way for my higher powers kind of nudging me to grow, basically. So here's a couple of things that have happened since recovering, was that I've had a lot of challenges in my life since then, but I've also had a lot of really good things have happened. And, you know, it's so amazing to just be able to feel things that, you know, you didn't feel before necessarily, because when I used to, besides overeating, I used to be like incredibly busy. Like, I was one of those people that was just like, I couldn't stop being busy. I was like constantly in motion, you know? And it's just like so nice to just like not be like that anymore. Like, I've kind of slowed way down. It's really nice though. And one of the other miracles is that 3 years ago at age 57, I got married for the first time. And I have to tell you, I've never had a healthy relationship in my life ever. They've always been pretty dysfunctional, in which I blamed the partner. It's like, if only he would treat me a certain way, then this would be fine, which, you know, I was, oh God, you know, it's so incredible how blind you realize, you know, God, I didn't know what I didn't know, you know? So I have a good relationship with my husband, and I'm very grateful for that. You know, I work on that every day. So I think, you know, the last thing I'm going to say is that I've had periods of like where I've had a lot of fear. And, you know, I would wake up in the morning with just this intense fear that was gripping me. And I just knew exactly what to do. It's like step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, probably admit it. You know, it's like, where am I not trusting my higher power? And I would just start writing letters to my higher power. I am afraid. I mean, it doesn't matter what I write, right? It's just, I'm so afraid this is going to happen or whatever. And I have to say, you know, I've asked for help from God from during these moments of fear. And I've just said, please help me. I need you. And, I know you're here. I I've also said, you know, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I know you're working on it and I know that you have me. And I have to tell you, like a couple of hours later, this has happened on several occasions, is that I'm just at complete peace, you know, and the situation's still going on, like nothing changed, you know, but I'm at peace. And I think that's just so amazing when that happens. It's just like, there's just so much evidence that God is out there and working. And actually, I don't really believe God is out there. I mean, God is inside me, because I love that that phrase in the big book. I think it's on page 55, but it talks about, you know, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Actually, I have it here. So I was going to try to read that next sentence, because that next sentence is powerful. It says, it may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. And that's really powerful, because I know it's there, because I've gotten such good results. So I think that's all. And I also wanted to share lastly is that my 60th birthday was a month ago, and my husband said to me, well, where do you want to go? You know, what do you want to do? And I wanted to go to the cemetery where Bill Wilson is buried. It's an hour and a half from my house. And I have to tell you, that was really powerful. I'd never been there before. And, you know, there's somebody I know in OA, lives in Arizona, who often says, you know, that in OA and AA, you know, these fellowships, we are standing on the shoulders of giants. And I really, you know, I felt like literally here I am at the cemetery at their plot. And I thought, yeah, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, really. I mean, it was so powerful to be at that cemetery. So anyway, I think I'm going to conclude with that. And I don't know how long I've talked, but I think that's enough. So thank you for listening.